ER101. In conjunction with the American College of Emergency Physicians, get the 411 on your 911. Here's your host, Dr. Lee Vinoker.
Hi, and welcome to ER101. I would like to welcome my next guest. We are going to be talking about, you know, this is the big sandwich generation, people caring for their kids and sometimes their elderly parents in their home. And most important things you can do for your parents during a medical crisis. And we want our caregivers to know when they should go to the emergency room with their parents and what they should do to prepare the visit and make it helpful. So I want to welcome my next guest, Dr. Melissa Barton. She's a clinical assistant professor at Wayne State University School of Medicine in Detroit, my alma mater, and she's the residency director at Sinai Grace Hospital Emergency Program. She's been the past president of the Michigan College of Emergency Physicians, as well as ASEP's National Public Relations Committee. So Dr. Barton, thank you so much for being here, and welcome.
It's great to be here, and I'm smack in the middle of that sandwich that you mentioned a few seconds ago myself.
Yeah, it is tough. Today, you know, I mean, especially as a woman doctor, too, I'm sure, like myself, I had my children a little later, so my mother was old. She passed away. I was older, and my mother was older at the time, and then she passed away, I guess, 5 or 6 years ago, but I cared for her that last year, and it's tough. There's a lot that people need to consider. So, you know, I've seen lists of what to do. What things do you sort of look out for with an elderly parent that might make you think, oh, this is something that's a little more serious. Maybe we should go to the emergency department.
Well, you know, it's always important to look at, you know, how they normally behave and if there's any change. And, you know, the elderly parent may look normal to the emergency physician, but we're not seeing them every day. So, for example, if they normally get up and fix their own breakfast, able to shower and get going in the day, maybe today they just want to stay in bed, or they're sitting in the chair and they're saying they're not hungry. We need to take a look at those individuals in the emergency department and make sure that there's no problem, particularly things like infection starting.
Right, because, I mean, you know, it's funny, as a doctor, we learn so often that extremes of age on both sides can cause potential for any problem. So infection and fever, very, very young little infants, and then you worry about the elderly, too, because they sometimes have the same mask symptoms of an infection as sometimes little tiny infants. So although they can usually tell you if they're not feeling well, but that's a very good point. I once was reading a list of that some of the top 10 medical mistakes for the elderly, and the other thing that we kind of see is sometimes there's a generational thing about, number one, just, you know, being very stoic and not complaining about anything and not complaining about pain. So ignoring warning signs. And you know, you've seen it yourself in the ER. You know, you'll ask an elderly patient, oh, how do they feel? Oh, they feel fine. And their adult child will look at you and say, well, you know, that's not how you were acting before. So there is this kind of stoic thing in that generation.
Absolutely. And, you know, and there's a perception as well that, you know, if someone in their 70s or 80s is taken to the hospital, then they have the misconception many times that they will not be able to return home and to their own home. And that's not the case. Many times if problems are caught very early, most of them go back to, their normal life at home and do what they were doing before the hospital visit.
So, and then what about elderly that sort of live at home? They're at risk for things, potential of, you know, medication problems, errors, things like that, which is a big problem today. Sometimes we see medication mistakes or interactions, right? I once read that if you're 70 or older, the chances of being on 5 different medications are very great. So there's a lot of interaction and stuff. So what tips can you give people for making sure their parents are not having any kind of reaction to that?
Absolutely. It's important that somebody has a list of medications that the parent is on. Many times I'll have family members say, well, we were going to bring the bottles of medicines, but the ambulance, you know, took off too quickly. Doctors can tell a lot about the underlying medical problems based on the medications that that patient is taking. And likewise, that would help us prevent from prescribing or administering any medications that would have a bad outcome or a bad interaction. We also want to be mindful that some of those medications, if they're being prescribed by more than one physician and the other doctors are not aware, can cause difficulties in and of themselves. It can make the parent dizzy, affect their walking, make them confused, dehydrated. So really, first and foremost, the medications are the key. We need to know who the doctor is. And many times the parent is taken to the nearest ER, which may not be the hospital that their primary care doctor, you know, practices at, and the son or daughter will want their parent transferred. As you know, it's very difficult to make these transfers without having the doctor's name and their phone number. That can alleviate a lot of time and frustration for everybody involved.
Yeah, so let's give a few tips. So you realize your parent isn't feeling that well. Maybe they're complaining of pain that's new. Maybe they have a fever. Maybe they're not eating. You know, because you're taking care of them, something's not right. So you decide to go to the ER. What things can you tell people to make sure that they have with them so that it is an easy visit transition and that things go well?
Well, medication and the doctor's mm-hmm. names and phone numbers. Just last week, I had a 76-year-old lady who came in with shortness of breath, and her daughter had with her a cardiac cath result and an echocardiogram that the patient had done the previous week at another institution. And that right there alleviated a lot of time and unnecessary tests because her heart, in fact, was normal, and we could look for other causes of her shortness of breath. So keeping some eye or some report on pacemakers, what kind of pacemaker is it, what your cardiac cath showed, did you have a stress test recently? And then ideally, you know, having had that uncomfortable at times conversation about wishes, should anything bad happen? You know, what did your mother say that she would want done? Rather than trying to make these very stressful decisions under a great, you know, stress in the ER if they're not doing well. And having a family spokesperson that can, you know, help relay information between siblings and people out of town with the doctors that are right there in the emergency room.
Yeah, that's very good advice because, and it makes it easier for medical care if there's one person that they can talk to. But certainly, you know, I think myself included, if there have been other family members that wanted to speak about their parents, I usually, you know, if the whole family and the parents are okay, I think that's okay to do too. But
absolutely. Absolutely. Because it's when there's a disagreement between the siblings that it can become challenging.
Yes, that is true. And all families have disagreements. So I think it is very interesting. Well, you know, it's a hard thing to be taking care of your kids and your parents at the same time. But I think, you know, getting the help of a primary care doctor and really having these conversations before your parents get sick is critical. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Melissa Barton, for this interesting conversation.